So let's just start off with an opening treatment to get this thing grounded in consciousness and focused and moving forward. So here's the truth. There's only one power, one light, one life, one expression of life that goes forward with ease and grace. It is that one power that creates all that is. Everything that is comes out of the one power, and it moves forward into form, into place, and into activity and expression. It is who we are. It is what this celebration today is all about as we come into the full recognition of the one, that we are it is us, and that is all there is. And so it is. Thank you. Short and sweet and to the point. So welcome to our wonderful celebration. This is an opportunity to take an hour out of your life and settle in and recognize a way of thinking and a way of looking that most of the world has no idea about. At least not the world on this continent. It's a way of looking at life that says there's only one power, and that power is good, and that power is expressing as everything. There are not two powers. There's not one thing fighting against the other. There's just the one, and we are expressing it in all kinds of multiple ways and all kinds of expressions and ideas. That while our lives go through many changes, the one power, the one truth, the one goodness inside of us does not change. So we're a place where we come together with that kind of, with that shared idea, and in that sense we are of like mind, and we come together with the recognition then that within that we have a multitude of freedom to express our lives according to our greatest idea of them. There is no wrong way to do your life. No one else other than you knows better about how to do your life than you do. So it's a rich and wonderful opportunity during this hour to affirm and reaffirm the truth of all of that and who you are and what you're about. So I would invite you then to join me, if you would, in our opening, actually it's our Declaration of Principle written by Ernest Holmes. So I invite you to stand, and if you'd like to, and let's read it together. I believe in one God, one absolute power and first cause to all things. I believe that this power is perfect love, and it creates out of a desire to express love. I believe all thought is creative, and how I choose to think creates my personal experience. I believe in the unity of all life and the immortality of the individual soul forever unfolding. I believe in the eternal goodness, the eternal loving kindness, and the eternal givingness of God to all, and so it is. Thank you, and be seated. So this is the time where we go a little more into this idea of spiritual mind treatment, where we can go a little deeper in it and get some great views and great ideas from someone else. So today, as you already see and know, our practitioner of the day is Doug Moody, who is the leader of one of the leaders of our practitioners. We have co-leaders, and takes care of all the scheduling and the making it all happen in between his very busy work schedule. So I'm grateful he's here. I'm grateful he's available to me and to you and to all of us to hold that higher truth and a higher consciousness. So Doug, take it away. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, CSL Midtown.
Good morning.
I love it. Everybody's springing forward today, huh? Clocks didn't get you hung up last night. Glad to see that. I'm very excited to be here with you this morning, especially with today's service, our living legacy, where we're honoring the feminine this month in March, but especially honoring the feminine influence in this teaching. And this teaching is so rich with powerful women leaders. And we are so blessed to have that as our legacy. And perhaps one of my favorite in the cadre of several very gifted women who have so vastly contributed to new thought and to this teaching, my personal favorite is Emma Curtis Hopkins. And I think part of that is because Ernest Holmes studied under her and actually became an ordained minister under Emma Curtis Hopkins. But she also had a very clear and precise and brief way of making a point. And so Dr. Bob Dean asked me, well, what's your favorite like quote and who are you going to quote? And I said, well, of course it's going to be Emma Curtis Hopkins. Mm-hmm. And I have this quote that I'd like to share with you this morning. And it says, "The world will persist in exhibiting before you what you persist in affirming the world is." Take that in for just a second. Short, sweet, to the point, but oh so powerful, right? And I think the key in this statement is the word persistently. Think about it. Each and every one of us, what are we persistently thinking into the world? Maybe if you take a little time figuring out and recognizing what that is, it might explain why you're seeing a lot of things pop up in your life. Just a couple of little examples of this. Which one are you? Are you the person that says, "My job sucks the life out of me, and it's so unrewarding"? Or are you the person that says, with the same job, "My job challenges me each day to learn and lead more productively, and I'm rewarded handsomely for it"? See the difference? Funny thing is that the difference is up to you. We all have the power to choose in each and every moment, each and every situation. And if you don't know what that choice is, take a deep breath and just know that you'll be divinely guided and say yes and follow your heart. Are you the person that says, "I'm so stressed out all the time"? Are you the person that says, "Yeah, I get stressed, but I also know that I can choose to be centered, and instead I choose peace"? Very subtle, but very powerful. And realize that every single second you're walking around thinking and saying, it's basically like you've got this megaphone and you're putting that out into the universe, into the law. And spirit and the law always says yes. So that puts it right back on each one of us. Anyhow, Ernest Holmes, Emma Curtis Hopkins' student, had his own quote that said, "Life is like a mirror and will reflect back to the thinker what he thinks into it." Same concept, just a little bit different way of saying it. But if you find yourself maybe struggling with some old persistent thought habits that maybe aren't quite producing the things you want to see in your life and in your experience, we have a great team of practitioners here. They're really awesome. And we can maybe help you discover within yourself some new and better ideas and things that you can be thinking more persistently in your life and getting some really cool results for it. So if you would, please join me now, and we're going to have a wonderful session of affirmative prayer. I'm going to lead this in the first person and ask you to accept that which resonates with you. Just relax in your seats. Unfold your arms and legs and limbs. Be open and receptive. And know this with me. There's only one power, one infinite divine creator, one cosmic something operating throughout the universe and operating through me and each right now and always. I am always divinely guided because this presence, this spirit, this law is always working within me and within each. And it works perfectly. We just have to recognize it and bring it forth in every moment and every situation. In this mindfulness, we become divinely connected, and we know that we are one with the divine creator of all there is. And knowing this, today I claim divine courage, divine love, divine wisdom, guiding me in each forward, and a life filled with infinite joyful self-expression, with infinite perfect health, infinite financial wealth and abundance, with infinite love and loving relationships. This is my truth and the truth of each. And I am divinely guided in this wisdom. I am blessed to bring this forward anytime I choose, in any situation, no matter what may be going on around me. I know to go within me, because that is where this truth always is. I celebrate this truth. I celebrate this knowledge. I'm so grateful for this center that reminds us each and every Sunday of the truth of our spiritual magnificence. My heart overflows with love and joy and gratitude for this understanding and for this teaching and for knowing that I have so many beautiful spiritual guides that have influenced and taught me and taught each. And I tap into that divine feminine wisdom that moves through as a complete and perfect part of myself and of all. I celebrate this, and I release my word into the universal law, knowing it is done. I simply let it be, and so it is.
So it is.
So this morning, for some reflective music, I came across a song that I hadn't really listened to in a long time. Tends to be the case when you're doing this, because so many of the current videos are not appropriate for this kind of gathering. But in the spirit of the divine feminine and the energy and the wonder that we are all taught and have such a rich legacy of in this teaching, I came across the song, The Wind Beneath My Wings, from the movie Beaches, which is a beautiful story about friendship and how two women supported and guided and were there for each other. And so my original intent was, you know, and still is, let's think about those divine feminine guides that we've had and experienced in our lifetime that have brought us to this moment and be grateful for their presence. And they're still with us now. So enjoy.
Thank you, Doug. For everyone who's thought of someone, take a moment and in the quietness of your own mind, be thankful for them. Say thank you to them. I had a whole movie going of people beneath my wings who've held me up and kept me going at times when it wasn't easy. Some of you are in that group, and I'm grateful for that. It's as beautiful an expression as we can come forward with recognizing and honoring the divine feminine. As we recognize the nurture, the care, and the support that is in existence in our world from the people in our lives and from other things in our lives. Some of you have great support from your cats and your dogs and your canaries or whatever other kinds of critters you may have. We find that kind of support and that kind of nurture to be all about an aspect of the divine. It's not the whole picture. We also have that aspect of the divine which is guiding and allowing us to set goals and to move forward. But in the process of that, we are lifted up and held high by that energy within us, and that energy of the divine we typically call the divine feminine. There's a story or a description that I read this week, has been sort of immersed in this whole question about masculine and feminine energies and beingness. And as we've said before, you know, this is not about which body you're in, although it does have a lot to do with it. You may be expressing according to your whichever idea of that is dominant, but you may not be, and that's okay. But in my reading about it or hearing about it, I heard this description of the masculine and feminine as being a river. That if life is a river, the masculine energy is the bank, the feminine energy is the water. Without both elements, you wouldn't have anything. Or you'd have something very different. If you just had a bank, you'd have a ditch, not a river. And if you just had water with no bank, it would flow everywhere and be completely lost and out of control. So the two together are what the divine mind is about, what the divine intelligence is about, and therefore what we are about. And whatever role you may be playing in your life at any given time for yourself or other people, whether you're the ditch or the water, it's a necessary part of the expression of the whole. And it's a good thing. It's a very, very good thing. So today we're honoring the feminine, the women, not just the feminine, but also the women in our movement who had amazing courage and who carried forward this teaching at a time before much structure even to the organization. There was some structure because they lived in a world that was very controlling of women. Women had very specific roles they were supposed to play. Someone said a big breakthrough, one of the largest and most important things for women having freedom and suffrage in this country, was during the time when men were arguing over whether it was appropriate for a woman to show her ankles. I know none of you are old enough to remember that, but it was really a real thing, and it was a very horrible, shocking thing if a woman accidentally showed an ankle. In that day and age, what should appear on the horizon but a bicycle? And women suddenly were free to hop on a bicycle and show their ankles and zoom off down the road to a place where nobody knew where they would go or who they were going with. That was a new kind of freedom. And it broke loose that whole argument and discussion about the ankles and about what parts to show. And it had a huge impact on the awakening and freedom for women in this country to begin to be have the freedom and exercise the freedom that was innate within them, and not always having to be the water within a certain riverbed that always operated a certain way. It began to break loose and break out. Hear these words. These showed up in magazines all over the country around the turn of the last century, the 20th century, by a woman who was a poet. And of course, that was an acceptable thing for women to write in those days. So she was one of America's favorite poets around 1900, and her poetry appeared in all kinds of magazines, men's magazines, women's magazines, things, scientific journals, all of it. And here's something of what she wrote. Words are great forces in the realm of life. Be careful of their use. Who talks of hate, poverty, or sickness has set rife these very elements to mar their fate. Further on, then, in talking about love and happiness, she says, use all your hidden forces. Do not miss the purpose of this life. Do not wait for circumstances to mold or change your fate. In your own self is destiny. Let this vast truth cast out all fear, all prejudice, all hesitation. Know that you are great, great with divinity. So dominate environment. Once let the spiritual laws be understood, material things must answer and obey. Imagine just seeing this in magazines, all different kinds of magazines. Later on in her life, once these started to appear, she was approached and became the editor for New Thought magazine for the International New Thought Network. New Thought Association, the earlier organization. And her writing began to appear around. Her name is Ella Wheeler Wilcox, and she was only with us until about 1919. She was born in 1855. But she was a rich, powerful carrier of the message and the gospel and the truth. She also wrote prose, which was less well known. And in her prose, she was one of the early people to describe this metaphysics as a science, to describe this idea that new thought, the idea of one power emanating and generating through each of us and directed and guided by our beliefs and ideas and thoughts, was a science. She established and put that idea out there. She wasn't the only one at that time. And most of the ones who were talking about that, interestingly enough, were women. Other women like Emma Curtis Hopkins that you mentioned, who left the Christian Science, which had been started by another woman who was healed and was doing healing work with her original teacher, Quimby. But Emma came to Religious Science with a fully formed belief system, and then the two of them just didn't quite agree. At one point, apparently, Mary Baker Eddy decided that her revelation of the truth was the final revelation of the truth. Anybody else ever hear that from somebody? This is the final word. It's the only truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. There won't be anything better afterwards. One of the challenges, I think, often with our spiritual histories becoming troublesome is when that idea gets anchored into it. So Emma Curtis Hopkins said, oh no, this isn't the final word. The final word is yet to be spoken. As long as humans take breath, the word will continue to evolve and be found and be brought forward. So she moved out of that, started her own group, started teaching. Her husband was having a bit of a problem with her having so much freedom and running around doing her own thing, and so he left her, and they divorced amicably, as it said. And she started teaching, established a seminary in Chicago, where she taught her basic principles, but her real power was in traveling. She traveled a month at a time to major cities all across the country. And this is the late 1800s. Women didn't do that by themselves, typically, so she had companions that went with her. She'd go to a city, she'd rent a suite at a hotel, and she would teach, basically our teaching, the science of mind, with more Christian language and Christian languaging, but not in the traditional sense by any means. She thought of the Christ consciousness as the truth consciousness within everything and everyone. She taught that you are the Jesus Christ of your life because you're the individual version of the infinite showing up as you. And she said, that's all that Jesus Christ stuff's about. And it's very powerful when you honor it and recognize it, that not only is that all it's about, that's enough. Imagine walking through your life saying, I'm Jesus Christ for my life. I hope you do. And it's not a sacrilege or anything against the historical version of that, but it's honoring that truth in you that says, I am the individual expression of an infinite power right here, right now. No apologies, no explanations, nothing to wait for. That's who and what I am. That's what she brought to us. That's the core of her teaching. And then she put it together into 12 lessons and taught those 12 lessons so that you did 6 days every day, morning and evening, lesson 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in the morning, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 in the evening, and then you took Sundays off. Everybody should have a day off, right? And what she would do is she would come into a city, she'd set up, she'd teach her classes for a month, she would teach these 12 lessons and go and expand and work with them. And at the end of that time, she would give her students the assignments of how to carry forward and keep doing those 12 lessons for themselves and get on the train and head off to the next city and come back a year later. So every month of the year, she was in a different place, and this went on for several years. And out of that, her students became teachers and speakers throughout our nation. And all of the major spiritual divine, you know, oneness groups, new thought groups, grew out of that expression. Divine science. Science There's another one in science like that. Unity, definitely. The Fillmores were her students. And on the list goes. And then, as you said, Holmes was her last student. By that point, she was not teaching classes anymore. She was teaching one-on-one. And was a bit reluctant. He kept pestering her with letters and saying, I really need to learn from you. I need to talk to you. And finally, she gave in and said, okay. And he would come to her suite at the hotel, and they would sit. She would come out, sit down, and she always wore these big dresses and floppy sleeves and, you know, grand robes kind of things. And she would come out, she would sit in her chair, and then she would sit quietly for a bit, and then she would just start talking. And that was her teaching method. And then she would get up and leave. And he said he was pretty intimidated the first few times he went, because he just was afraid to say anything. I don't know if any of you studied with Kennedy Schultz, but if you did, you know we were all kind of afraid to say anything, because he was speaking truth, and you didn't know who would tolerate how much ignorance in the room. And finally, Holmes said things began to get a little more relaxed, and she asked him to ask her questions. And from that, they began to be more back and forth and sociable, and he learned even more from being able to question her and look at her, what she was doing. Powerful, powerful teacher whose influences still go on. She's got a website. She's been gone a long time, but she's got a website. And there's information. I have an app, an Emma Curtis Hopkins app, that invites me twice a day into the lesson of that time, Mondays. You know, it's the same thing every day. And then I can add my ideas and thoughts to it, and it guides me through a whole week of study with her. It still goes on. This influence is huge. It's huge within our teaching. It's huge in our lives, in my life. Another one who has influenced me, and there are so many, there's no way to go through all of them, but I just wanted to share a couple of folks who have been influential in my life, is Florence Scovel Chin. Florence grew up in Philadelphia, which I first heard about her when I lived in Philadelphia, so that was kind of cool, and went to the house where she grew up and that sort of thing. She spent the first part of her life as an actress and an artist. She did illustrations and artwork for children's books, and some of those are still around, and you can still find them. But at one point in her life, after they moved, she and her husband moved to New York, she married an interesting character who was described as a dandy, and they moved to New York. He was very interested in promoting his career, so at some point he came to her and said, "I'm done. We're not doing this wet marriage anymore." And this was just towards the end of the 1800s, which again was not an easy place for women of that time to be in. And she said, yes, okay, fine, that's done, and then went through quite a transformation. And during that transformation, somewhere, somehow, and I haven't been able to find out where, she discovered this teaching. And she created her own version of it, and created a whole new career in which she became a teacher and lecturer. She wrote a book called Life, this thing called Life and How to Use It. And she took it to a bunch of publishers. Nobody would touch it. And partly because she was publishing under her own name, which was a female name, not a male name. And so finally, she had some silver that had been passed down in her family for generations from the days when her great-great-grandfather was part of the Continental Congress and knew George Washington, was a relative, and all this kind of stuff. And her family was rather poor, but they still had that silver. She went and sold the silver to get enough money to publish her book. And she published that book and two more during her life. Very little is known about her beyond that, except that her teaching and her work and what she did when she taught. Beautiful ideas and beautiful thoughts, as far as I'm concerned. The book, you know, Life and How to Use It, is a really rich and powerful piece of work. I just want to read you a couple of things that she wrote. One of my favorites is in her second book, which is more a companion to her talks, where she spent a lot of energy and time using affirmations. She really believed in affirmations, and she taught affirmations. She said, affirmations are your magic wand. Wave them over any situation and change it. If you don't like what's going on, wave the magic wand of your affirmation. One of the disturbing ones that she has as the end of the book is an affirmation that says, nothing is too good to believe. Nothing is too wonderful to happen. Imagine that. Anything that you think of is absolutely wonderful. For me, it was traveling the world. It's happened. Nothing's too wonderful to believe to happen. And here's the real kicker. Nothing is too good to last. Everything changes. Goodness never goes away. The power within us never goes away. Life within us never goes away. But things change. And today's good is tomorrow's better. Or today's good is tomorrow's not good enough. And we move into whole new ideas and new things. And she carried all of this idea forward through her work. She did a lot of one-on-one counseling with people, what we would now call spiritual mind treatment, where she sat with them, she heard them, and she built a greater and greater future. Another of my favorite contemporary is Marcia Sutton. Some of you have heard of her, some of you may not. She created the whole, she and her partner created the co-creation process. And we've done some of that here with Fear to Faith, where she created a process using this teaching to get us from our fear into our faith. She said, if you're afraid of anything, don't be afraid to be afraid of it. Don't be afraid to look at it. The biggest, you know, way too often we think that if we're afraid of something or if there's something troubling us, we shouldn't take a look at it. Marcia said, oh, no, Nanette, look straight on. Ernest Holmes said, look any discordant fact in the face until you know better. So if you got something you're afraid of, describe it. Look at it. See it clearly. And then think about, what would you really love to have happen instead? And write that down. What's your idea of the very best outcome? What would be the absolute best? Vibrant health. Great prosperity. And describe it in your mind and picture it and imagine it as already happening. Because what carries forward? What we believe, what we think, what we imagine. Now then, she said, once you have that established, you know what you really believe and desire to have be your best thing, then go back to what you're afraid of and think about it. And think about it as if it already had happened. And get right down in the ugliness of that. And when you get down in the ugliness of that, look at what is the false belief that is driving that feeling. What are you believing? Do you believe you're not as strong as that your health is not stronger than some virus that's floating around and everybody's shouting about? Do you believe that this teaching is really kind of a good idea, but you can't expect it to work for you in your life? Do you believe that whatever is going on that's negative is just going to keep going on and getting worse? You know, get clear about that false idea and false belief. Do you believe there are things in the universe that aren't stronger than God itself? What do you believe? Where is that? What is the negative idea? And when you get clear about that, let it go. Affirm it is not the truth. It is a lie. And go back to the truth of that idea of what you imagine God to be as the perfect right outcome that you'd imagine first. Now, I know that's a little convoluted as far as explaining it because it's not a linear process. It's a back and forth process of affirmation and denial, which is core to our teaching. Marcia has lived that demonstration. She made a decision after her very successful time as a minister in a church in California. I don't remember what year now, but it was about the time I got into this teaching, so probably, or into this ministry, around the mid-90s. She suddenly realized that she could do ministry her way by finding 10 people who would tithe to her ministry. Because if 10 people tithe, then she would have the equivalent of a full salary and income. Especially, and if they were especially wealthy, then she would even have better. And she started her ministry based on that and has continued it right on through till now and has lived very well and very successfully and created this idea and more and continues to teach. She's been a teacher of most of the ministers in our movement and really a mentor to many, myself included, where we were able to work one-on-one with her through the years about whatever was going on. Powerful influence. See, this teaching from its beginning, from its start, was a place where women could be recognized as the spiritual beings and spiritual leaders that you are, and gay men, and others who the rest of the world, and this evolved at the same time that in the rest of the world, the great revival movements were sweeping the nation, and Christian revivals were happening, all led by men, and in a very different kind of structured way. This was kind of like the backside of it, showing up and expressing and becoming greater and becoming bigger. And it was rich and it was wonderful. And we have the result of it. There are so many more, present and past. I can just name a few, which I'll do. We have folks like Kathy Hearn, who Dr. Kathy Hearn, who's a contemporary minister, who was the leader of the United Churches of Religious Science, and she and Ken Gordon were the co-leaders that brought us together into unified organization. Dr. Jane Claypool, who wrote many, many, many books for children and adolescents under a pseudonym, but brought this teaching into fiction in a way that most people had no idea it was coming from science of mind. And she also wrote some books about women. And she wrote a book called New Thought, New Women. She wrote a book called Wise Woman, which is a really powerful, powerful book. She did retreats. She's no longer on the planet, but she did retreats for women and for men around that whole idea of growth. Candace Beckett, who still works with the teens. She and I are the two senior teens in the whole program, and we are recognized as such. And she was also a leader, RSI president for a while. She was before Ken Gordon and some others. So we just, you know, Reverend Carol Carnes, Reverend Kathy Palma, on and on. There is, and right now today, there are women ministers in most of our centers. We have more women ministers than men, and they are the leaders and the heart of our organization and growth. This is how we were able to unite, was through the power of the women, the teens and the women that brought us together. And I just can't shout and sing that kind of stuff loud enough. So as we come closer to the end here, I want to ask you, so what's on your mind? It's what's on your mind, all the nonsense going on out there now, the panic and the carrying on, as if this virus, which will come and go and pass away, nothing is, you know, too good to not to change, not to go away. Nothing is too bad. Is that what's got you stirred up? What about this stuff in the news that says the world's, it is ready to say the world's coming to an end, but the economy is going to be collapsing because of it, and this is happening, and that that's happening. We have a new election coming up, and whatever you think about that, and blah 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 blah. Got all that stuff. Well, I'm here to tell you whatever is on your mind, what these women taught, and what I have shared with you already is still true and real and powerful. They were teaching this at a time when the world looked very different, when they couldn't show their ankles. The world's still here. You're still here. We're still here. And they brought this forward. You and I have the joy, and it may be the responsibility, to keep carrying these ideas. So for every hour you may spend in front of the TV or on the internet looking at, oh my God, how awful it is, and looking for the next possible solution, for anyone who actually does that, I wouldn't know anything about it, but for those of you who do, spend it in thinking about how powerful you are, how healthy you are, the fact that your body is an expression of God, your body is an expression of the infinite. one of my favorite quotes, I can't get to it now, but Florence, Flossie was her nickname, Flossie's, one of her quotes was, "Your body is the body electric." Now, that's been a popular term lately, but this was written in 1926. Body electric, expressing the very energy and power of the infinite, the divine. So there's nothing to fear. There are cautions to take if you choose. No question about it. I'm not saying ignore. But I am saying, if you're clear, or if you're in that fear, then turn your fear into faith. What is your biggest idea of what could be? I am in perfect, divine, vibrant health. And that is my birthright. That is my natural expression. The divine within me, the pattern within me. That was also her idea. The divine pattern within me of my body is now expressing on the outside as well and coming through me. And that's a rich, wonderful idea. Grab onto, spend time with, meditate on, think about, practice those ideas. And you'll sail through this whole thing with much greater ease. Now, granted, some folks are already compromised. Some things are already going on. You take care of yourselves. If there's an inner nudge to you that says, I should not be in a crowd today, don't be. Because there's also an infinite wisdom working inside of you. If there's a sense in you that I ought to do an elbow touch and not a hug, do an elbow touch. You can have fun with that. We had a lot of fun with that in the lobby. Or do a toe touch. The kids are doing that one. Toe touch. It's a hug. Or stand in front of somebody and imagine energetically and lovingly holding them. That's a powerful piece to do. Find another way to connect with people. Find a way that answers that call within you to be yourself, to be real, and to know it's not coming out of fear, it's coming out of a faith in that the life in you is greater than anything in the material world or anything the material world can hand you, because it truly is. And that's because you're wonderful. So am I. So it is. Thank you.
Good morning. Find my notes here. As Bob was going through that, I have a very strong connection to my sister. She's 3 years older than me, and she's my hero. And then a couple names came to mind with Karen Drucker. And her music is just amazing. And then Mary Morrissey as well. And so there's a number out there. And it's interesting because he asked us for ideas and none of them came up. And now I'm sitting there in the audience and it's coming. So it says, my name is Lee Huffman. And it says I'm a member of the Board of Trustees, but I'm not anymore. But I'm still here. I'm a practitioner and I'm pleased to be that. And I really enjoyed representing this organization as a board member. Now is our opportunity to support the center and its work through our giving. I want to thank everybody who's already giving regularly through the Fellowship One website. And I know that a lot of you are doing that, and it's wonderful. And everybody's invited to do that. It's a good way to have it happen regularly every month. And so that's excellent to do that. And then we also can put in money right here as they pass the plate. So please join me in reading the affirmation of prosperity, which is back there. I live in a universe of abundance. As I freely and joyfully give, I join in the divine flow, and all that I share with life returns to me multiplied abundantly. And so it is.